Please help me welcome Nikki.
Hi, everyone. My name is Vicki. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
nice to be here. I'm here tonight for anyone who doesn't know the format of AA or anyone who's new to this program, completely new, just to basically share my experience, strength, and hope, what it was like when I was out there drinking, how I got here, and what it's like today being sober. It's always interesting to start. Where do you start? I guess the beginning. I'll first say that for today, I'm sober 14 years, which is hard to believe. Even when I say it and it comes out of my mouth, it sounds like it's somebody else saying that. It's really been a miracle. It's just a question of days accumulating and every day just doing the best that I could for that day. And here I am. That's the way I look at it. It's as simple as that. I'm going to tell you a little bit of what it was like before I ever came to AA, before I knew anything about what an alcoholic is. I had, you know, a family. I had a lot of back and forth, you know, parents divorced and then lived here and lived there. I have a lot of half-brothers and sisters. My father was married 5 times. I can give you the whole family kind of history, but I think I would probably take up most of the time telling you that. Let's just say that right from the get-go, I was in situations where I was used to constant change. I was used to really not being that attached to the situation or even people at that time. So I say that because it's something that obviously followed me through my life and into sobriety as well. So at this point, I went to live with my mother. I was 11 years old. And my mother was more the more lenient, let's say. She was maybe even too lenient. And I went to live with her, and it was kind of like I had a lot of free rein. And being 11 and 12, and all of a sudden seeing neighbors that were older than myself, I just naturally fell into kind of the wrong crowd, so to speak. And I started smoking cigarettes and drinking and all these things at the age of 11, 12. And that just kind of started my whole path. I don't remember the very first drink, per se. I don't remember that evening. I do remember leading up to it. It was like a big deal. I had a friend of mine who was close to the same age as me, and we were hanging out with kids that were like 16, 17, and it was our big goal was to drink like them. And every week we would want to try it, and we were afraid, and we wouldn't. And then finally we did, and that's really all I remember is the finally we did. And from that moment on, my life changed. It was just something that became a focal point. I didn't necessarily drink every day at that age, but it was a focal point. It opened a whole door of a group of kids that were just about hanging out and, you know, smoking and drinking and doing all the opposite of what you're supposed to be doing. And that was my whole school years. High school was all about that. It was all about looking cool, dressing cool, being with the right / wrong crowd, and just going to school to meet my friends, to smoke dope and drink. And I have no idea how I got through every year. I honestly don't know. I didn't bring any books home, ever. Honestly, I did not. And then finally, in the end of my high school year, just before the last year, I decided I had enough. And I say that because it was typical of my personality and as an alcoholic, and I've seen in several alcoholic friends that I have that the same similarity where, you know, just at the brink of like accomplishing something or finishing something and I'm out the door, you know. And it started then. It started grade 10. Oh, I've had enough of this. It's a drag. And I just decided that's it. And got into the working world with whatever I could. I was a little high school dropout, and, you know, I grabbed jobs here and there, you know, waitressing and whatever. And that was it. I had no idea, no real goal, no vision. Could not see myself in any way, shape, or form in the future of what I was going to do on this planet. And it disturbed me a great deal. I was like, as much as I couldn't see what I was going to contribute or do or be, was as much as it drove me crazy. I just didn't know what to do with all this stuff going on, this energy, this uncertainty, fear. That is really the bottom line of this alcoholic, fear-based. Everything I did or didn't do was fear-based. And of course I covered that up. I covered that up by drinking. I covered that up by pretending to be mysterious and tough and whatever I needed to do. I covered that up. But deep down inside, I was just a walking ball of fear on every day of my life. So here I am. You know, I'm dropped out, I have a little job, I'm living in the West Island, which I had a big resentment towards. I hated the West Island, I wasn't really from there, and we moved to the West Island, and it seemed like most of the people I knew were either a cheerleader or a football player, or, you know, had the house with the brother and the sister and the dog, and it was just me and my mom, and that was my viewpoint anyway at that time. And I just spent the time going to the bars. My first bar, I was 14 years old. The Maples Inn, probably dating myself, but anyway. And, you know, I discovered the bars, and that was it. That was what I wanted to do. That's all I wanted to do, was where's the next party? Where's the next bar? Where's the next anything? That's all. I wasn't interested in anything else. And the in-between was becoming more and more grueling. The Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday drag days of the week where everybody has to go out and be responsible. Like, why do they need to do that? Was my attitude, you know? Like, why? I mean, it's such a waste of time. I had this attitude that was just so rebellious and so against the grain and so, you know, just wanting to be partying all the time. So that's what I did. I guess I had some snags along the way, a few little weird things, you know, cars turned upside down, someone pulls a gun, weird things that happen when you're hanging around with, you know, weird bar people and doing things that, you know, at all hours of the night. So these things will come your way, like it or not. And luckily I'm here today and nothing too drastic happened to me. I finally got to a place where I decided the problem, I couldn't do it anymore. I kind of ran the wheel, you know, like a hamster on the wheel, just going over and over again, you know, doing the same thing over and over again. And I went to every bar that was like all in the West Island and around that area, and there was just no more I could do. I mean, it was just all the same thing over and over. And I decided, well, the real problem is the West Island. I'm trapped here. It's a horrible place. I'm trapped. I can't take it anymore. That's it. I'm leaving. I'm taking off, and I'm moving to Florida to be on the beach, you know, and I'm going to just, like, start a new life there, and I'm going to have a great time, and life will be good, you know, because this place sucks. And I did that. In a roundabout way, I did that. I met a guy here, and then he ended up going to Florida. I'm like, he's in Florida. So, and, you know, it was kind of like, you use me, I use you kind of situation. And I went down there, and ironically, just before I had one of my last, like, kind of really, I guess it was a bad night, I drank, I remember very clearly, I drank, it was during, happy hour between 5 and 7, I think I downed I don't know how many rum and 7-ups, and I didn't usually drink hard liquor because it really hit me hard. And I was the type of drinker where I'd have a couple of drinks and then that was it. I blacked out. I would not remember things. I had this friend of mine who really served as my memory the next day. So what did I do after that? It was almost like a game to me, you know. What did I do after that? What happened at that point? How did I get home? I had none of these answers. She could have told me anything. And I'm sure she, kind as she was, left a lot of details out for me, you know, that she probably didn't want me to know. And to me, that was a regular thing. I thought that when you drank, when anyone drank too much, that that's what happened. And this particular night, I was angry at this boyfriend, and I was in a blackout at the bar and kissing some other guy. And I'm saying this because this is just the way it was. And I got in a car angry, and next thing I know, it's the next day, and I'm at home, and there's a plant turned over on my floor, and there's a piece of my car hanging off, and I don't know what happened, as usual. And I'm trying to put the pieces together, and I'm trying to figure out what is it that I hit. Was it a person? Was it a pole? What was it? And in that moment of desperation, out of the blue, really out of the blue, I was reaching in my purse. It was the next day, and I was very humbled and, feeling humility, I guess, in some way. And I reached in my purse for my cigarettes, and I found this coin. Somebody, I don't even know who, gave me a coin similar to the ones we have here, but it was just actually the face of Jesus Christ. It had nothing to do with AA, but it was really weird. The act that happened was I reached in my purse, I saw this silver coin, and somewhere out of the blue, I picked up the phone to call AA, and this is no word of a lie. And I knew nothing about AA. I knew nothing about how it worked. The mere fact that when I came in here and heard about this chip and call your sponsor before you drink and the action of calling is pretty weird when you think about it, pretty uncanny. And so I called, and I spoke to some guy spoke to me for a good half hour. And all I remember from that conversation was he, of course, suggested a meeting, and he said to me, "You're really, really lucky, you know, to have this awareness at your age." And at that time, I was 21, 22. And I hung up the phone, and I guess somewhere I realized, I always really knew there was something wrong with my drinking, but not quite labeling it or really knowing deep down what it was. I realized then, I guess I have a problem, you know. And so what did I do? I moved to Florida anyway. And I decided, well, it's a clean slate. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to be with this guy who accepted me after what I did the night before, and I'm going to go on to a new path, and I'll make a life there. And I lasted 4 months of non-drinking, decided to quit smoking at the same time, and jog on the beach. It's all or nothing, right? And I lasted 4 months of, you know, really what I would call, or we call in here, white-knuckling it. I mean, there was no... It was just a removal of something that had been my best friend for the longest time. Just removal, you know, like surgical removal, and I'm left with myself. And so I lasted 4 months, and something happened with the relationship, which was given. And I really wanted to stay in Florida, but I realized, you know, I'm an illegal alien, and I don't know how I'm going to really do this, and I wasn't really sure. So I came back. I came back here, and I really didn't want to be back here. And this was the beginning of the end, and another beginning. I was close to 25, and I came back here, and I was extremely bitter and extremely angry. And because all these series of events that happened, and you know, I really felt like I had the raw deal in life. Like, nobody had the raw deal like I had the raw deal. And just all that combined, I came back here, and, you know, there was something really strange. Even through all these things that I'm going through and the feelings that I have and the hopelessness and not knowing where I belong in the world and whatnot, there was this tiny, tiny little flicker I guess I would call it, of hope, even though it was not there a lot of the time. There was like something kind of nudging me, kind of saying, there's got to be a better way. You know, there's just got to be another way. Maybe there's something else. And I came back here and I got a job and I started to say, well, I'm just going to concentrate on building a career, even though I had gone back to high school. I had gone back to an alternative school and got my high school leaving, and but then I didn't go to college or anything. But so I said, well, I'll just focus on that, because at this point I hate men. I hate, don't trust or like people at this point, and I was just really self-absorbed in my, like, in my own little bubble. And you know, when I was out partying and having a good time at the beginning, I used to like spend 3 hours with my friends, getting dressed, you know, brushing my long hair, getting all dressed up, and it was like, ooh, we're going to have a great evening. And at this point, when I came back from Florida and was in this, on this track, I cut my hair, I didn't care about anyone, I didn't care about anything, and I was literally just like a machine, you know, one day after another, getting up and going to work, and well, I'm just going to focus on what's in front of me, this job. And I really was at a point where I was in between a grueling life day after day and death. I didn't want to live the life I was living, because not that my life was so horrible. It's not like I had people chasing me, you know, for money that I owed or anything like that. That's the strange part. I was kind of like a high bottom drunk, where I kept my things in order. I kept everything on the outside looked okay. But on the inside, I was just a mess. A real mess. And nobody knew, and I didn't talk to anybody, so it just festered more and more. And I was at this place where I was just going to work, coming home, going to work, coming home. I was in a period of controlled drinking. I landed a job, and this is some of the special things that have happened in my life that go unexplained, and I to this day I can't explain them, other than there's definitely some other power that intervenes or gets involved, because I just had some lucky breaks and I had some things happen that I don't know how happened. When I came back from Florida, I had this idea where I want to work in a lab. You know, out of the blue, I don't have any schooling in that area or whatever, and I decided I wanted to work in a lab. I was always drawn towards medical and I wanted to do that. And lo and behold, I'm like, staying at my half-sister's place at this point in NDG, and she was the one who was the alcoholic, by the way, in my mind, because she drank every day, and she lost her job, and her walls in her kitchen were yellow from cigarette smoke, and she hardly went out anymore. So she was a severe alcoholic. Mind you, I would go see her and drink with her, so... Anyway, I was there at this point, and I was looking in the paper, and I found this job. No word of a lie, need people to work in a lab, no experience necessary, well trained. And I applied, and someone who knew someone who worked there took my CV, put it on top. And anyway, all this to say, it started at the beginning of a long career of where I am today. But I didn't know that at the time. So anyway, I made that focus, and I went to work, and I started doing controlled drinking. I lived at this point by myself, in an apartment by myself, and I remember, even though I wasn't 100% clear of the fact that I'm an alcoholic, I moved in, and it was going to be the first time that I was living completely alone with nobody around. And the first thought when I moved in, I said, uh-oh, there's no one around to comment on my drinking. And I remember that. And I had some pictures of that apartment, and I looked back not too long ago, and it's pretty funny because I have this shelf in the kitchen, you know, and it has all these little shot glasses, you know, all like just almost like a, what do you call that, a mantelpiece, you know, just. And it was still very much my focus. So the controlled drinking I was doing was, the days that I was working in the clinic and I had to deal with sharp instruments and all sorts of things, I would not drink too much. And the schedule on my fridge is what controlled my drinking. I'd look and say, okay, this morning I'm there at 6 a.m. and I have to do this. And And I guess, you know, the reason why it worked was because I knew that I needed my job to have money to continue to drink, right? So so that was the controlled drinking period. And the days that I didn't have to work or handle sharp objects or whatever, I would definitely drink. But at this phase, I was completely cut off from everybody, so I drank alone. If I didn't drink alone, I was drinking with my half-sister, who was the really bad alcoholic down the road. My life had become very small, and I was only 25, and everything was cut off. I was starting to live in my own little world. I would drink and turn on my music and turn on my tape recorder and sing into my tape recorder, and I was gone. I was just in my own bubble. And every day became more and more grueling, the so-called sober days, the non-drinking days, to the point where I was really reaching a limit, and I started to outwardly say, I'm going to kill myself. I can't do this anymore. I just don't know what's wrong. Everything on the outside looks fine. I'm building a career, and I don't know what's wrong, but I can't do this anymore. And that's where the magic all came in, and it was kind of a slow pace, but I didn't believe in anyone, anything, or myself. So I had someone who had told me, I knew they believed very strongly in God. They were actually born-again Christian. And I said, how do you do that? I mean, how can you just be so sure and believe in something so strong? And they said, well, just pray to believe. And in AA, I don't know if any of you have heard this, but fake it till you make it was basically what he was kind of saying. So I started praying to an emptiness. And all I kept saying was, I need to change. I don't know what I need to do, but if you do exist out there, point me in some direction, because I can't go on like this. I'm at my wit's end. And things started to happen. I was at my half-sister's place, the one who drank. And I was there one night, and the door rang, and this guy came in, and he was the, used to be, their beer delivery guy. But he wasn't delivering beer this night. He was actually delivering a message, an AA message. And he had come out of Beaver. And I guess like a lot of us, or I'll speak for myself, when I first got sober, I ran to the people that I felt needed AA, you know, and needed to get sober. And I wanted to hook them in and come and see what I've got and get on the path with me. But it doesn't work that way. Anyway, he came for, I guess I would call a 12-step call. He was going to a meeting that night, and I remember that particular day was when I was on the cusp of, I want to kill myself, but I can't kill myself, but I can't live like this anymore. And he arrives at my sister's and says, well, I'm going to a meeting. And I kind of like really got, what? You're going where? And he explained he was going to an AA meeting. And he had one of these with him at the time, different color. He says, do you want to come to the meeting? Now, did I even think, like, well, why the hell would he ask me, you know, to go to an AA meeting? I just kind of said, oh, no, sorry, I have plans tonight. I really can't. And the craziness, the insanity of that, you know, where I was just so lost and wanting to die, but no, I'm not going to go to an AA meeting. But I did say to him, I asked him what this was, and he told me it was a meeting list, and he had a little place where he had written people's names and numbers, and I said, well, could you get me one of those? Again, it was like somebody else had spoken. I don't know where that came from. And this is the importance of AA, of all of us here. You know, you never know. Like a good, responsible AA member, he came back and gave me one of these. And I've been here ever since, you know. I don't know where he is, unfortunately. But that's the game here. That's like we're here for each other, and it's so important, you know, just to do that one little thing, how much of a change it can make, you know, in someone's life. So there I was on the road to recovery, not even knowing it. I went to my first meeting with this guy, And I got to a meeting called Sobriety and Beyond, which was all young people, which was really amazing. Bumped into some old high school people that had been there. They were 5 years sober, you know, and I was like astounded. And it was a really crazy meeting. It was fun. It was wonderful. I got involved slowly because I was very apprehensive and I couldn't really talk to anyone. I was very much into my own bubble. But eventually, I started hanging out with all the newcomers, the new people that were there, the people who were 5 years sober, a bunch of us. And we would just do coffee, you know, after the meeting, and we would do other events together. And there was a lot of little, like, kind of artists in the group, and one would be doing this show, so we'd go and see them. And so it really started this fellowship that was just amazing that I had cut off completely from, and always had trouble having anyway. I always had a couple of friends, but then I'd switch groups, and I'd switch groups, and I'd switch groups. And I still have that tendency. But I have been sticking to the people that I've met here that are very special to me. Sobriety was kind of, at the beginning, I had panic attacks at the beginning. I literally did. I really was full of fear. I didn't. The Living Sober book that someone mentioned in the literature was really great because it's very small, very simple, very just don't walk by the places you used to drink. You know, little tips like that at the beginning that I really, really needed. And the best thing was the fellowship with somebody. Every week I'd come here in this very meeting, in this very church. It was a Tuesday beginners meeting. And I had this temporary sponsor because she stood up and said she was a temporary sponsor. And I didn't even know what a sponsor was. I really didn't know. But I just said, okay, I'll take it. You know, I had no idea. And every week she'd say, I'd say, I don't know. You know, I feel like I'm going out of my mind, like I'm going to be locked up or something. I don't feel right. And she'd say, don't worry, you're not going crazy. Just keep coming to meetings and don't pick up a drink. And she'd say this over and over to me, you know. And it got me through, like, week after week. And things, I start to feel a bit better. And I would wake up in the middle of the night in a panic attack, like, what's happening? I was really, really like a fish out of water. It was a slow process, you know. I was lucky to meet a lot of women that were solid, that believed in the steps and believed in service. Really important. They had me doing things I was not comfortable doing, but I needed to do them. I needed to stand at the door and shake people's hands and say hello because I wanted to just be in the back row and kind of like I always used to be on the school bus, you know, just kind of back row. And, you know, I just started getting involved and I started learning about myself and I started learning slowly how I reacted to other people. And then I started learning about how my reactions to other people were causing my problems sometimes. And so on and so on. And then that's where the steps came in. And that's where I started to be able to start looking at myself. I mean, I did the fourth step. Everyone was, oh, the fourth step. And I was petrified of this thing. And I didn't know what it was and how I was supposed to do it. And I did it, you know, like for the first early time, four times in a row because I just didn't get it, you know. And I get to that place where, as it's laid out in the big book, you know, what were my wrongs? What was my part in things? And I'd go blank. And I remember I had this one sponsor who sat in my room for 10 hours. I don't know why she did that, God bless her, but 10 hours, every line that I had of a resentment, we'd get to the part of, well, what's your part in it, of it? No word of a lie every time. I don't know. And she'd say, come on, I mean, look, da-da-da. I don't know. I'm telling you, I don't know. And I really believe, like, I had no defects of character. I really, really thought that it was everybody else who had done me wrong, and it was just such a horrible world, and people were so horrible, and I was so nice, you know? I was so nice. I didn't get it. Why did I get this raw deal? So anyway, it took some time to start unraveling all that and seeing the side that I played and like, oh, I was being nice with a string attached that I wasn't aware of and a lot of these things. And then it brought me to a place where I decided to go into some therapy. I wanted to learn a little more. I wanted to understand myself more. I wanted to see why in sobriety, after quite a few years, I kept repeating the same thing. And I was like, oof, what's wrong here? I mean, I'm sober, I'm not drinking, and what's going on? So it led me, that was like another stage, you know? And that, they talk about getting sober, peeling the layers of the onion, you know, that peel off. And it's a continuous thing, and I think it's not even, it's about sobriety, it's about being an alcoholic, and then it gets to a point about being human, you know, and that whole balance. There was a peak in my sobriety early time, like from, I would say after the first year to year three, I was like a kid in a candy store. I woke up and I was discovering myself. I was thrilled about life. I saw that there was a whole entire world out there, though I thought that life sucked and it was boring unless I was in a bar. It was boring unless I was in a bar. There, right there, is a good sign of insanity. You know, today when I bump into fellow members who might be new or might, you know, be feeling that itch because they think it's boring to be sober, I say, well, if you really think it's boring, go out to Farnham and jump out of a plane or do something crazy like that. You don't need to go into a bar. It's not going to tell you that life isn't boring. And I got to a place where I tried everything. You know, I went to school. I tried acting classes, singing classes, kickboxing. Let's see. News and feature writing. I mean, I can go on and on. I just was all over the map. I was just pulling everything in, soaking everything up. All those years lost, you know, very lost, serving my master, alcohol, and just becoming free, you know, just becoming free to try everything. And today I try on a daily basis to remember that, you know, I'm free. I don't even have to try to remember that aspect, actually. I feel it. And that every day I make choices. I do make choices. I am not a victim of something overpowering me. I make choices on a daily basis. I make a choice on whether I'm going to have a shitty attitude and complain, you know, about my job being this or being that or, you know. Or I can say, well, okay, I'm having trouble today. I'm not as positive as I'd like, but I'm going to try, you know. There's so many wonderful people I've met in AA that just kind of, I don't even remember all of them. You know, it's just little sayings that kind of float by and I grabbed on and I remember so well, you know. And the first time I was 4 years sober and someone said to me, you know, I was miserable. And someone said to me, you know, Vicki, you could get up in the morning and make a decision to be miserable or happy. And it was like someone took a shovel and hit me in the head. Really? I mean, I never knew that. I thought I was such a victim to my own emotions, my own state of being, that I started to realize, oh, I make the choices. I can work at this I mean, I'm not talking about a clinical depression. That's a different story. You're kind of, you know, can take over. But, I mean, I can work at it. I can do things to bring myself out. I don't have to go down deep into that pity pot. You know, I really don't. And there are some tough knocks, you know, and I'm grateful today, you know, for some of the people in AA that, you know, out of the blue. I remember coming here one night. I was newly sober in Tuesday Beginners. And I was full of pity, you know, I was just, and I mean, I was sober, I had a good job, and I was, you know, okay, I was healthy, everything was great, and I remember, it was gratitude night, and I remember the member of the meeting said to me, well, you should be grateful, it's gratitude night, you know, don't be on your pity pot, or something along those lines, you know, how some people can just kind of feel they can come and tell you these things, but I was so angry, you know, whereas today, if someone said that to me, I'd be like, oh, yeah, you know. But I was so angry because it hit home. It really hit home. And that was my biggest thing, was just staying in my little pity world, you know, and I had to work at that. Sobriety has been beyond good for me. I try not to cry out of literally tears of joy. Sum it up. When I was out there, when I was younger and when I was out there drinking, I felt like nobody in this entire world gave a damn about me. Nobody, including myself. And I felt so destined to nothingness, basically. And I came into sobriety, and today I am so filled up, and I have so many people that care about me, and I care about me, and I'm proud of me, and they're proud of me. And, you know, my sole career is being sober, you know, being sober, because anything else doesn't matter after that. I mean, if I'm not sober, none of that other stuff is going to matter. It's just not going to matter. You know, the job that I have, I mean, jobs come and go, but I did stop and say to myself, wow, from a high school dropout to, you know, a major director at this point of a company out, you know, in like one of the high rises, these things don't matter to me, but they do in a sense that from 0 to 10, you know, from 0 being not sober to sober, and then all the things that happen after that, and you know, the friends that I've been able to maintain, the relationship I have, you know, with my boyfriend and a little 5-year-old, you know, it's a gift. It's a real, real gift. The fact that I can get up every day and be healthy. There was a period of time in my sobriety where I was hospitalized and really got to taste what it's like to be sick. And not anything near, like the neighbor down the hall in the hospital who had lived there for a year and just died while I was there. You know, there's these realities, you know. And when I bring all this stuff into focus, how dare I complain, really. But I'm human and I'm going to do it. You know, at times. But someone said to me, you got sober, you're staying sober, you can do anything. And I like that analogy, that saying, because no matter what comes up, no matter what I have to deal with in life, I can do it. I can do it sober, you know. And I don't have to do it alone, as much as I used to take pride in that, you know, because I was the loner, mysterious type. Today, I pick up the phone, you know, and I go for the help. Because why do I want to do this alone? You know, what am I trying to prove? We all need each other. That's the base reality. I get so much out of one thing that I've been consistently doing. And I say that because I'm proud, because I'm not good at being consistent. I have been going to Beaver Foster Pavilion pretty much once a month with an old timer, and we go and talk about, you know, for the people who are there who are new, we tell them about 12-step programs, and I swear I get more out of that than any of them probably do. I don't know, but I know for me it just puts everything in perspective every time, that there's no difference between me and that person sitting in that rehab, you know, for their couple of days sober. You know, in a sense, the only difference there is maybe I've accumulated time, but their drink is as close as mine can be as well, you know, arm's length. There's a period of time in my sobriety, I've done this a few times, where I've removed myself from meetings for a while and made other priorities my priority. And I'm here to say that, for me, it's not a good idea. It works for a while, I'm okay for a while, and then it gets really sneaky, you know, cunning, baffling, and powerful, as they say. Very sneaky. Where lately it was, well, I mean, the man I'm involved with is a normie, an earthling, as they'll say, and a lot of my friends and coworkers and whatnot. And my life is going great. I'm at the top of the world. I'm just doing great, health-wise, everything. Little sneaky thoughts like, were you really an alcoholic? You know? I mean, maybe it was because you were so lost and you had to get these things in order and work on yourself in therapy, you know? Maybe you're not. And then it just started coming back over and over, these thoughts, you know? To the point where I was like, thank God, mentioning it to one of my friends who's a recovering alcoholic as well, enough on the phone. And my boyfriend at the time, where literally he said, do you think you should go back to, you know, a meeting? You haven't been in a while, you know. And I kept saying these things and making jokes about, you know, well, what do you want to drink? Oh, I'll have a rum. That is not a joke. That is not a joke. It was amazing how my mindset started to, you know, and I've heard enough and seen enough people be sober for a long period of time and get to that place. Either something catastrophic, you know, horrible has happened in their life, a death of a loved one, and they go out drinking, or a lot of them who have made it back to talk about it, and maybe there's some that are fine out there. I'm only speaking for myself. It always comes down to, I know for this alcoholic, if I'm too successful and doing well, and I mean like all across the board, everything's stable and calm and I'm balanced, and it starts getting a little weird, you know, because I'm not comfortable with that. Don't know how that works yet. And it's been like that for a few years now, and the struggle I have gone through of my old self just trying to do something to throw me off, you know, get in debt or, you know, leave, go to Florida. Move to Florida. All these crazy thoughts. But the difference today is I know myself. I know that alcoholic. And that alcoholic is always here. Always. Doesn't matter how, you know, sober I feel on a given day. I do know that the alcoholic still is there and lives with me on a daily basis, you know, and waits for these opportunities to creep in, to say little things. And I think that's important, you know. I know knowledge is not what gets people sober and keeps people sober, because I've heard enough people say that knowledge goes out the window at some point. You need something greater than yourself to keep you going. But I think knowing my disease helps a lot too, you know, knowing the tricks and knowing the cunning, baffling, and powerful aspect of it. When all else fails, I'm quoting, not that I'm good at quoting these things, but when all else fails, help another alcoholic is one of the things. And that's so true. You know, no matter how shitty I feel, if I push myself to go say hi to that person that I haven't seen before that looks a little uncomfortable, amazing how maybe I help them feel better and I walk away feeling better. Or if I have a grateful heart, there's no way that I can have that and going on and also have a desire to drink. It just doesn't work for me. It's two opposites. So the key is to keep a grateful heart going. This is the place where I will be hopefully always coming back to. It's going to be 15 years, and it's probably the one place that I kept so consistent, that I've been a part of consistently. And it's my family. I mean, I just moved to the East End, which really isn't that far, and I made all these reasons why I couldn't come back here very often, you know, because I didn't have a car and my life and this and that. And when I come back here, I just immediately feel like a key in a lock, you know, just fits. And I couldn't imagine my life without that. It's just an incredible feeling. And to know that I can go anywhere in the world and have that feeling too, you know. Never to be alone is a big thing. I wish everybody had that, you know, place to go where they never have to feel alone. If there's anyone new or struggling at this point in your sobriety, I don't have major words of wisdom. I just have probably one thing that someone said to me, which is no matter how dark it is, just hang on to the rope, and it'll pass. It'll pass. Nothing stays the same. And when I go up to the rehab, the thing I like to drive home, and I wish I could just kind of open everybody's head and put this in, which is, whatever you used to do or you're used to doing, do the opposite and you'll be fine. Don't listen to your own thinking. I'm saying that because I do that, and I know it sounds kind of strange, but my old thinking, I don't know if that makes sense, but I don't listen to my old thinking. I can recognize it now, and I can literally say, oh, you again. Sounds a little kind of schizophrenic or something, but it's not. It's like I just recognize my old thinking and know that that's my alcoholic thinking, and I need to move that aside and leave room for the new stuff that I've been learning. And just doing that on any given situation, no matter what's going on, it's always helped me. Anyway, thank you, Sandy, for asking me to share tonight. I hope that I said something that could benefit somebody, and thank you for listening.